Welcome back to Biff, a podcast about superhero TV shows, movies, and posters that you hang on your dorm room wall. My name is Dan Morin, and I am joined this week by the rest of my time-traveling fashionistas. Guy English is here. Hi, Guy.
I think if I go anywhere near a dorm, I should get arrested because I'm a little bit aged out of that myself. But I do like superhero posters.
Okay. All right. That's a lot. John Moltz is also here. Hi, John.
Guy, you are welcome in my office anytime because if I turn to my left here, I see New Mutants, I see Doctor Strange, Fantastic nice. Four, and Wolverine and Elektra. So
why are they all come in on your over. Why are they all in your office, nice. John?
I have gathered you here for a reason.
Ooh, Avengers Assemble. We are here this week to discuss the most recent episode of Legends of Tomorrow, Season 5, Episode 4, entitled Ahead of Her Time.
Get it?
And this week, the recap will be performed by the one and the only me. So let us dive right in. We have, I think, three main plots this week. In the A plot, Sarah goes off to Star City to do some unspecified business, leaving Ava in charge of the ship. Ava's a little worried that she is not going to be able to cut it. So she basically tries to give the crew binders full of information and like a methodology she developed at the Time Bureau. Legends, obviously, very much not into that. And when they are alerted to a mission in France in the 1700s, the Zari convinces Ava that she should go along. And she turns out to be useful as she gets them past the guards at a party that involves this week's encore, Marie Antoinette, who seems to have some sort of supernatural charm. The party is a raucous one that never ends, and people gorge themselves on cake and like are literally dying to be at the party. So Zari uses her party skills to navigate Marie Antoinette away from the party with the help of Ava, since they seem to be the only ones immune to her charms. They take her back to the Waverider, but not before her face has an encounter with a low-hanging piece of wood separating her head from her body. At this point, Zari eventually discovers, she looks at her own future, even though Ava told her not to, and sees that the perfume she's been developing causes people to lose their sense of smell. And so she goes to steal Marie Antoinette's perfume, realizing that it is actually what her magic power was. It creates charm. So at the unveiling for her perfume, she uses it a little bit and then accidentally spills it on herself, causing everybody to turn into a mass of zombies that essentially chase after her. The legends show up to save the day. Ava and helps basically Zari jump into a fountain to wash off the perfume. Meanwhile, back on the ship, Ray and Mick have to contend with Marie Antoinette's body, which is running around and has grabbed a flamethrower because legends.
Because it's the funniest thing that could happen.
It was hilarious. Eventually, at the end, Zari is back on the ship. She's got her flannel shirt back. She eats a donut, which may cause her to remember some things about her past life. And she and Ava have become fast friends. There's also a bit that we'll go into in, I think, probably more detail, which involves her boyfriend in the future. We'll get there. So in our B plot, Constantine is basically still in the room that he went into at the end of last week, where he is being tortured, it seems, by Natalie, who is Astra's dead mother. Gary tries to save Constantine, but only succeeds in letting the ghost out of the room. And essentially, Natalie makes Constantine sort of relive his past, trying to get him to admit to what he actually did. It turns out that he used to date Natalie, and when he was going to resurrect her, because she died in a car accident, and her husband came to John and tried to get him to resurrect her, and he wanted to do it because when he and Natalie had been an item, he had chosen magic over her, and he wanted to prove that he was right to do so, and so he could resurrect her. Natalie briefly possesses Charlie, and says that they're looking for the loom of fate, and that's the reason that she brought Charlie to the mansion. Charlie cops to the fact that she destroyed the loom and scattered it around the multiverse, but now something has changed, and her past is catching up with her. Meanwhile, in a linked C-plot in Hell, Astra has gone, after having been reprimanded because her soul plan is not working quite as well, she takes a chit essentially representing John's life and takes it to a demon, witch, something, and says that she wants to kill John, and the demon slash witch agrees to do so in return for a future favor. Though Constantine has 10 years before his lung cancer catches up with him, they advance it to today. Back in the present, John starts coughing up blood and is not in great shape as Gary and Charlie look on. Dun, 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 dun.
Dun, 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 dun,
still gonna take some getting used to.
Yeah,
yeah. That was darker than I thought it was gonna be.
Well,
the B plot.
Yeah, so that's
The B plot. Yeah.
We're delving into like kind of classic Constantine Hellblazer storyline. So they mentioned, I read an interview with the EPs where they talk about, so Dangerous Habits is the Garth Ennis written storyline in which John contracts lung cancer and basically does every sort of wheeling dealing magical mysticism he can to try and get out of it. And they're not doing a straight off take on that, obviously, because it's Legends, but they are drawing some inspiration from that. So interesting decision.
I honestly expected it to be a bit of a comedy bit. Like the noises coming from the room, I half expected them to just be having sex with a ghost or something.
I thought that
wacky. Yeah, I thought that might happen. You
know, yeah. But that's a bummer for John. And it's weird because what's his name's there too? Man, I always forget the guy's name.
Gary.
Gary, exactly. I mean, I guess he's at least there for like a little bit of comedy support, but he seems. It's a little jarring, you know, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't lean on him as much for comedy support in this episode.
Right, the beginning. There's a
most
little.
Of your comedy, you're getting most of your comedy from the A plot, and so the B plot is mostly serious.
Yeah,
but there's some dark stuff. I felt that like it got closer in some places to the Constantine show, the original show, where like you know, there's like knives flying around and like stuff getting thrown against the wall and weird, creepy demon children, all who turn out to actually be fairly innocent, but like it's creepy.
Right.
Yeah, I agree. It's a little darker,
children,
but it's not
are just creepy.
Yeah, I mean, we all agree about that. So I didn't think it was like, it's not super dark, but is definitely on the darker side. And I like that. I actually liked the counterpoint between that and the A-plot with its wackiness.
Yeah, there was a lot of contrast. One thing that did kind of amuse me was that they basically really skimped on hiring anybody new. Yeah. In both the plots, like it's just an actor just gets repurposed or repossessed.
Well, that's
like,
the
fine,
weird, yeah.
Whatever.
That's the really weird thing about the A plot, right? Like, you know, I started thinking, like, why was she Marie Antoinette? Why was
explained?
It's never explained, but I did read an interview in which they're like, we just really wanted her to do this. Like, essentially,
yeah,
we just really wanted
like,
to do
yeah,
it.
Yeah, and the crazy thing about this show is it works. It works fine, and you accept it. Like you know, I thought, like, huh, why is she Marie Antoinette? Is that going to be something else? You know, is that going to turn into something? It's like, no, she just like...
yeah, and they mention it, right? Like, Ray thinks, like, oh my God, is that Nora?
He FaceTimes her.
Right.
Like, check it out.
Yeah, here's a disembodied head with a sock stuck in its mouth. It's the kind of wackiness that works on this show where it's like, why double cast the actor? It's like, you know, why not? Yeah. Why not? It works. She does a great job. And I think it's a fun episode where. I was kind of wondering how they were going to integrate new Zari into the cast. And it was nice to give this sort of episode where not only does she prove her worth by being able to sort of navigate the fancy party, But also, you know, she has her typical Legends moment of, I'm going to screw something up. Mm-hmm. And but it's not like held against her, right? Like they make a point of that, like later on, right, where it's like, you are, you know, you're locked up Marie Antoinette, but not me. And, you know, Ava is essentially like, look, you made a mistake. It worked out. It's fine.
We all do it.
We all do it. That's the show.
That's right. You're on the right show for that. If it had been Flash or something else, then you'd be off the show.
I was wondering why Katie Lotz essentially doesn't appear in this episode, only at the beginning and the end. I think it's because she directs next week's episode, and she was probably doing like pre-production. I think it's the first episode she's directed. So my guess was they might have given her a light week in advance of that.
I also think it's just to play Ava off
yes.
of Zari.
I think it's
the
probably
two
that too.
The two of them are the most diametrically opposed characters, and you know, having an episode where they, you know, start out kind of like chafing against each other is
right,
and then end up being friends at the end is just the magic of this show.
Yeah, no, I think it probably was a combination of factors.
And you kind of expect
factors.
Sarah to be able to just go then.
Yeah. No, I'm just saying, like logistically, it's possible. Like we know we're not going to have Katie for this episode. So mm-hmm. let's write an episode that's about like navigating some of these other characters.
Yeah.
And I think that it worked out great. Like, I think it's got a lot going for it. I think, again, like we've talked a lot about Ava and integrating her into the crew this season. And I think I feel like they've given her a lot of time to shine this season, which is good because mm-hmm. she's a character that I think we mainly saw in definition, like via Sarah. And so giving her a chance to do her own thing and explore her own character is it's fun and it's interesting. And I'm glad that they've given her a chance to do that.
Yeah, for sure. I have had a boss like that or a manager like that with
the binders,
with the Aloha, like just the overly. Oh,
yeah.
Trying to engage Can we all? You. It's like, please stop. We know what we're doing.
But I like that it works out sort of at the end. Like they make a joke about like they're all doing all the steps when they're at the giant zombie, you know, party scene.
Oh yeah.
And B, yeah, yeah. I do love that, of course, this is our Ray Palmer moment of the week. Ray is super enthused about the binders. Like that is right up his alley.
Of course.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, yeah, and immediately and I knew before anybody said anything that he was going to,
of course, yeah,
completely on board
because that is who Ray Palmer is.
Yeah.
Yes. Like he keeps trying to stop Mick from attacking Marie Antoinette's body, which of course leads to the body getting the Mick's gun and chasing them around, which is kind of a brilliant moment and a brilliant like physical comedy piece.
I don't, yeah. and I know I shouldn't. But I don't understand how that head body thing works. Like, what? What was that about? I know it's dumb and I shouldn't ask, but had she been murdered and then reanimated and her head now pops off because she got
She was beheaded. Yeah, yes. Marie Antoinette was famously beheaded.
Well, yeah. Okay, that I knew. But I didn't know if that had happened because I thought this party prevented that from happening.
No, in all cases, I think we've seen that it's them. They are resurrected they are killed.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So she just has a detachable head.
Yes. Essentially.
Basically. Okay. Yeah.
Yes. As a gag, as you do. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There's a couple more Hellblazer references here, including on the radio, they play Mucus Membrane, which is, I believe, the band that John Constantine is in. And we get in the flashbacks, we get him with a mohawk, which is kind of hilarious.
Yeah, I kind
have
of
they
like
mentioned that band before. That seems familiar.
It may have been mentioned it may have been mentioned in that episode where was it mentioned in the episode where you first meet Charlie and it's like the 80s.
Yeah, I was wondering if that's the one I was thinking of. So
yeah, I'm not sure, but I mean it's from the comics.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it was mentioned. I can't remember if it was mentioned. I'm looking it up. It looks like it was mentioned in Constantine. And it was mentioned in the in the episode with Charlie.
Yeah, okay. They play up his magic as sort of an addiction style thing, like a very 80s style heroin style, like mm-hmm. Trainspotting kind of thing. I mean, as much as they can on a goofy show like this, but like he's clearly, it's driving him bananas basically, right? And he keeps sort of chasing that unicorn, I guess.
That high? Know,
whatever. Yeah. Some kind of magical horse. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Pegasus. It's a Peggy. You got your Pegasus, you got your unicorn.
I had to pick one or the other.
I think that's pretty much it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I do want to mention.
Oh, no, there's a pale horse. There's a bunch in the Bible.
There's a lot of horses. The Bible is just full of horses, just left and right. Horse, yeah, horse, horse.
It's mostly actually originally about horses, but they beefed up the B plot a bit much. Yeah.
Two bits that I really enjoyed. One, this is kind of an aside in the A plot, but Mick, who thinks he is ill, is actually just has a crush on his
high school sweetheart,
and involves an amazing scene where he goes to have Gideon scan him, and Gideon says, "Dr. Palmer's diagnosis is correct. You do like her," which I thought was great. I like any moment where Gideon gets to just be a wacky robot,
a sassy AI,
and special mention to DJ S'more Money, who is Zari's boyfriend in the future.
That was awesome.
I don't know what's happening, but it's hilarious.
I think it's like it's just a character. It's like a Daft Punk affectation type thing, right?
Except, he wears a s'more hat.
Except a s'more hat. Yeah.
But it's too funny. Like, honestly, that's something that would come out of like 30 Rock style, you know? Uh-huh. They have a skit with S'more Money, and the guy's just walking around the office with a hat on all the time.
Yeah.
Like, it's so weird.
Yeah.
It's so weird and pointless.
I was trying to figure out who the actor was, and he's not. I mean, this is like his second appearance in anything. Like,
okay.
I thought maybe like he'd be that was going to be
like Ray
either,
or Nate.
Either a reveal toward the end, because I looked at him as I was watching the episode, and I thought it was either going to be a real reveal at the end where the hat's going to come off and he's going to be somebody, or it was going to be like some secret joke where he had to look up who the actor
was. I thought it was going to be like Nate or something.
Something like that. No, it's just some guy.
Is he handsome? Yeah, he did a good job.
He doesn't even have a picture on IMDb.
Oh man. Okay. Wow. I just love the idea of getting like a really beautiful guy and just sticking a s'more on his head and being like,
right. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I thought that was a funny and bizarre bit. Where he's like, I'm going to propose marriage at the MTV Music Awards, and then he proposes on the carpet because Zari's used the perfume, and then at the end, Nate punches him in the face.
Why did Nate punch him? Just because...
He's jealous.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, that's what I got, and I'm like, I don't know. I didn't know if he's supposed to have done something bad to her, and then it just went in.
No, I think it was just Nate being petty.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Which is fine.
He's got a giant s'more on his
face.
Yeah,
exactly.
It deserves a punch anyway.
That seems punchable. Yeah. So I enjoyed that. I thought that was a bizarre bit, but again, it works on this show. And overall, I thought this was this episode was pretty solid. Do we want to do a ritual?
Sure.
I mean, I guess we have to.
That's the Biff guarantee.
Is the ritual doing the ritual, or is it explaining the ritual?
The ritual is trying to rescue the
ritual
from hell.
I don't know if I feel like explaining the ritual.
That's fine. Oh. Just give me a rating.
No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. It's my favorite
He's just
part of the
kidding.
Show.
Oh,
man.
it's a Biff. It's a Biff. Yeah. I really do think we should recalibrate this at some point, because we've been handing out Biffs like they're going out of style.
Well, but that's, but, you know,
that means,
yeah,
they deserve
it's true.
It.
It's true. It's calibrated. It's calibrated to like Arrow season 5, right?
Right.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it's as quote unquote calibrated as
when as you know, when be. You could get when you could get a whole bunch of you could experience the entire range frequently within a series, within a season.
Yeah.
Whereas now it's like now that we're watching good shows.
Yeah,
really. A little trickier.
They're all
Biffs. We start splitting hairs a bit. But it's a Biff. I enjoyed it. It was fun. The A plot was just good, wholesome. Well, I mean, there's a decapitation, but just good fun.
That's
I like the party. I like the guillotine
cutting the cake.
They're decapitating rich people, so that's okay.
Yes, that's also also a positive. I kind of expected them to have like a champagne bottle underneath the guillotine, rather
close,
than a cake.
Close, but you got to let the meat cake.
I should have seen the let the meat cake thing coming. Yeah.
I almost did a let them eat cake joke at the beginning of this show because, you know, during my introduction, but then Guy mentioned the superhero posters thing, so.
So you had to
hop on the fly, adjust.
Hop on the bandwagon. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Speaking of eating cake, Zari keeps flipping out. Do we have a theory on where that's going? I know I just subverted our reading, but I forgot about that bit. Like, she seems to be flashing back, right? We've just integrated the character as a new character, and yet she seems to be reintegrating her old past self.
Right. Well, interesting is that this is a thing that occurred not because of Crisis. This was previous to Crisis, right? Because it was the result of the finale in Legends last year, where essentially they changed her whole plot. In the previous seasons was her, she was from the dystopic future, which he was trying to prevent, in which I think her brother, either Bayrat had been killed or was like imprisoned. I can't really remember. But it was all about like saving that future, and they did save that future. So she never joined the Wave Rider. Hence, and her future is much rosier as a result. So it seems like being on the Wave Rider is returning some of her memories. She remembers some stuff, it looks like, at the end of this episode, though she doesn't be, it's not clear, right? Like, she kind of has that flash, but at the same time, she's not like, oh, I'm back to normal now, right? Like, or I'm back to my previous incarnation.
Yeah. Well, I mean, she's flashing about eating donuts all the time, right, which is hardly like a massive reveal. It's weird.
Right, right.
But, you know, like, getting the computer skills last week, that was a little bit more... Right. Tangible, I guess, you know.
Yeah,
like, there's no explaining that.
So. I don't know. I'm kind of curious to see if they go a direction with if Zari, you know, version one overwrites Zari version two, or is rather like more of a melding of the two characters. I'm not sure which direction they'll go.
Yeah, I think it's difficult to write an entirely vacuous person.
Sure, and she's clearly not, right? Like, we get a lot of insight into her as someone who has, like, she's a savvy business person and has essentially been building her brand since she was a kid, but she doesn't actually have any friends.
And her brother loves her. And he seems like a really nice guy, despite, as we've said before, sort of predilection to hate the guy. He seems awesome. So,
right. Yeah. Yeah. They have
for whatever reason, he seems to like her and get along with her. So she can't be all bad. I know that's a weird calculus, but
makes sense. Yeah. It's the funny thing where it's like, I think you're intended to see her as vacuous at first, but it very quickly becomes apparent that there's more going on there.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I have enjoyed what they've done with her because she hasn't been... I feel like they tread carefully about not making her just sort of a total parody. Mm-hmm. And they want her to be still a fleshed out character, even if she's not the Zari that we knew before. I will say there's an episode coming in a few weeks called Zari, Not Zari. Which makes me think that we might get more of a
some answers to the
where this is going.
Yeah, I also like that while they fashionista her up, they haven't like totally done a sex bomb thing on her.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's, you know, it's high fashion, tasteful, but it's not gratuitous, like just over the top stuff, which is cool. Yeah.
So John, did you have a reading?
I did. It's the same. It's a
yep. Yep. All right.
It's a biff. I mean, I don't know what to say. I mean, it's not like one of the top episodes, but it's definitely fun to watch as usual. And I really liked seeing Ava set against Zari in this sort of crazy context as they are wont to create, and she even gets in one of Sarah's pre-mission catchphrases as well, which was fun.
Mm-hmm. So yeah,
that was good.
Yeah, I'll round out the biffs. I mean, any episode that gets me to laugh out loud, which I did in the scene where Ray and Mick come around the corner and the body is just running into the wall.
I love it.
It was funny. It made me laugh. So, and then when it got the flamethrower, also made me laugh. So I feel like that's hard. That's hard to do on a regular basis, but Legends generally pulls it out. So I enjoyed that a lot. I thought the character moments were really solid. We also get, and I think what is sort of leading to... So we do know that Brandon Routh and blanking on the actress's name, but Nora, who is actually, they are actually married in real life.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Courtney Ford. they are, I believe, leaving the show this year, and I feel like the relationship that they're building up between them is sort of setting the groundwork for that, because this week we have the moment where they first exchange I love yous.
Yeah, which was very cute.
It was very cute. It was cute. Yeah.
And you know what I loved is that she was like, I don't need to apologize, and she said, I love you too.
Yes,
and
it
was
tender. And it thing. Yes.
Right. Yeah. Man, I loved it, because like we were saying last week, every time they set something up and you're like, oh, here's the trope, they just don't do it. They've got, you know, they've got enough airtime filled with a headless body running around with a flamethrower that they don't need to like eke it out with like the weird I love you trope, and now it's a little bit awkward, you know? Like,
yeah, right,
because it's that. And it, again, I think as we said last week about the same thing with Ava and Sarah, is that it treats these people as adults in adult relationships rather than, you know, so many things on this network and other networks are about like teenagers navigating nascent relationships. No, these people are all grown-ups. They can handle it. So
even though they don't act like grown-ups all the time.
But that's fine. They act like grown-ups at the point where I think it's more important rather than the like running around and screwing up, screwing up stuff in history.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's sad. I didn't know those guys were leaving.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like it's like, what, like at one point Alexander Siddig and Nana Visitor were dating. They had a child together.
Yeah, right.
I bring up entirely just to bring up something about Star Trek.
Star Trek reference, yep, got it.
Yeah.
Saw that coming.
I didn't even get TNG, I got DS9, but whatever, I'll get there.
Yeah, I think that was announced at the, it was a while ago that it was announced, like a year ago or something. It's before, I think, this season, well before this season even started to air. And I think it was also suggested that perhaps they had not left, not to say of their own volition, but like essentially it felt like the characters had run their course, I think was what the EPs were saying. And like they've always envisioned this as a kind of a, I read a very good interview with some of the EPs saying like, we've always envisioned this as kind of like a halfway house, essentially, like people who need to find something, and they come on the ship to find that, and then when they find that, it's time for them to move on. And I think, again, it's a little unorthodox, right? Because so many shows will be like, we've got this set of characters, and now we're going to, you know, run them into the ground repeatedly over the course of seven seasons, which can get a little tired. So as much as I will miss those characters, I'm okay with, I like the fact that Legends has a little bit of a revolving door in terms of having characters come and go, because I think it keeps the show fresh.
Yeah, I like Sarah as the marm, too, sort of thing. Like, at this point, she's, certainly, if not the one of the most established characters in the Arrowverse.
Right. I mean, it's basically the originals who are left are her, Ray, and Mick.
Yeah, and her and Ray started back in season two of
Arrow.
Well,
and just on that show, but Sarah's, you know, been on in the universe longer.
They both started in, she and Ray both started in season three of Arrow.
No.
Yep.
Season two.
Dun, dun, dun. She was, there's the original Sarah who is seen in,
well, yeah, true, you could, yeah, if you
yeah, want, I'm not, yeah, I'm not counting her. I really did think that it was season two, because
I believe
he's tied up on the Amazo at one point, and that's the reveal that she's there, and the Amazo sinks at the end of season two.
Maybe she appears in the flashbacks in season two.
Yeah.
All right. You're correct. I missed it.
I think so. I don't know. I mean, I'm honestly not trying to argue with you here.
No, that's fine. I thought we had lost the flashbacks versus the modern day. Mistook when that happened, but you're right. Yeah. Season two.
That's a thing I didn't even remember at all, that she was in the flashbacks before she was in.
No, see, I actually think it's season two for both of them, but it's hard to track down exactly when that happened.
Anyway, this is definitely something worth litigating.
Yeah, let's keep going. People love
No, come on. Lean into it.
But yeah, she certainly has the longest tenure, followed by Ray and Mick. Mick probably goes back to season one of The Flash.
Yeah, he's season one.
Yeah, so they've been around for a while, but it's, yeah.
But in terms of people who we know who are still on shows.
Yes.
right? She's the one with the longest tenure.
Yeah, that's a good point.
She's the godmother of this entire thing.
Right, which is one reason I really loved, and we discussed this in our Crisis episodes, but I love that they had her step up after Ollie's death to act more like the general for the Super Friends, just because she's a good fit for that role. She is accustomed to leading a team. She is, you know, accustomed to being, she has kind of a military-ish background or a martial arts background. So she fits well.
Which is another funny moment in this episode is when she just appears in the mirror behind.
Yes.
Right. I love that.
She's like, sorry, old assassin habit.
I love that. Man, she could appear in my bathroom mirror anytime she wants.
Moving right along.
Amazing woman.
So, yes, next week we will return to discuss the following episode, which is entitled Mortal Kombat, K-H-A-N, and sees, I believe, a resurrected Genghis Khan. That episode is directed by Katie Lotz, as I mentioned, and I believe involves Khan on a scooter at one point. So, very much looking forward to that. But overall, I think we all like this episode, and perhaps it is time for us to jump over to a little bit of superhero sweep.
Dun, dun,
you
dun.
Sound unsure. But
I don't know. I mean, sure. Yeah.
But yeah, sure.
Let's do it. All right. So I think we had a couple things that we wanted to talk about this week, superhero-wise. One of them was, I mean, John and I, especially, were talking about The Flash before we started recording today. And it's sort of interesting take post-crisis of... So I knew going into this season that they had structured it. The showrunner, who I believe is new this season, Eric Wallace, I want to say, basically structured it as two graphic novels that kind of sandwich Crisis. So the first half of the season, we had Bloodwork. And then the second half of the season, we've got like sort of a new ongoing plot. And one of the things that's interesting about these episodes is that they have foregrounded Iris much more in this back half of the season.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a good article that was passed along to us by reader Daniel. It's not me, but... Good name.
Dan is just now sending himself.
I'm just sending articles, people.
Yeah.
Good article, and it's actually over at TV Guide, and it's basically, The Flash finally let Iris West be black, and now the show is the best it's ever been. And it sort of deals with Candace Patton and her role on the show, and the fact, so Eric Wallace, who is the new showrunner, is also black. And so a lot of that is talking about having someone like kind of in her corner to just sort of knows what it, you know, knows the experience and like can help bring out that aspect of that character, as opposed to that character being treated as sort of colorblind, as they were describing it earlier. And it's a very good read. I highly recommend it. Well, I'll put a link in the show notes. But I think it also speaks larger to making that character more central, because I think they've had a lot of trouble dealing with that character over the course of the show. That's one reason that my wife stopped watching it, was she felt like the female characters were very poorly served on the show.
We've talked about this before, but also the fact that it's his sister, so
I
think at this point, like six seasons in, it's time to let it go, just because I will never let that go.
That's not a thing you should let go.
I mean, whatever,
it's just weird.
Yes, but it's the way the show is now. I don't think there's any.
Have they stopped mentioning it at least? Like, he can
pretty much.
At this point,
they don't have him, you know, show flashbacks of him mooning over her, you know, when they're kids.
Yeah, because he can still have a very loving, strong, fatherly relationship with Joe.
Yeah, sure.
That's the dad's name, right? Joe.
Yeah.
Now that they're married, like, it doesn't. I think you could just kind of like, oops, we screwed that one up. Let's put that in a cupboard somewhere and just.
I think keep moving, don't
address it.
Because
I don't think you want to go back and rewrite the history like Flash could.
Oh, yeah,
you know, it's better, that was a mistake. Let's just get rid of that, you know? So
I think we just let it go and move on. But I think, again, I think the interesting part of this has been the struggle to figure out what to do with that character. And I think they've done a nicer job in the back half of this season of setting up. She has her own team now, like kind of in, for her newspaper, And they've got like sort of an investigative thing going on. So that makes an interesting sideline to a lot of the Team Flash stuff, which I think is... And they've sort of, in the last few episodes, they've also pulled out some of the Team Flash characters who haven't appeared. So like Cisco is off doing something and Ralph is off doing his PI thing. And so it's given a chance to sort of foreground both Barry and Iris's relationship and Iris's sort of investigative journalism side, which I thought has been an interesting refocusing of that show. So,
yeah,
I don't know. I don't know if you, John, I knew you were, I think you're a little further along than I am even, but I didn't know if you had thoughts since you're still watching the show, apparently.
Yeah, I'm still watching it. Yeah. I mean, and I agree with you. I think like it's getting a little bit better. I don't know if it was, I felt like I wasn't as excited, and I'm still not quite as, I'm certainly not as excited to watch it as I am Legends, but I think the last few episodes have been a little bit better. The last, this one seems a little better too. Ralph is back this week. So he takes up a lot of the show this week.
I will say my favorite bit, last week's episode, which was sort of a Valentine's Day themed episode, brought back Katie Sackhoff.
Great.
She is delightful anytime she appears on this show because she is just devouring scenery left and right.
Oh my God.
Yeah. But it's great. They have a whole thing with her and another character that she used to is like her ex. And it's involves some very funny moments of Barry trying to like broker like essentially a peace between these two warring villains who used to like had feelings for each other. It was like a weird kind of one-off random episode, but it was very amusing.
That's a very Flash kind of thing too, though. Like almost maybe a goofy Wally West version of Flash, like the...
Yeah, yeah.
He's got the Flash Museum, and it's all kind of goofy, and he fights Captain Boomerang, and ultimately he's kind of sweet to the bad guys. Like they're mostly they're trouble more than villainous, in a way.
Right,
right.
Yeah, and I think they do that a little bit this past week, where it's like he spends a lot of time not suited up for particular reasons, and it's him trying to avoid, you know, solving the problem that way. And I think it's nice. Like I like any episode where they can spend some time realizing there are a lot of problems that Barry could solve by running very fast, but he doesn't have to solve every problem that way.
In fact, that's kind of boring. That's basically the knock against the character in the first place. Like
you just end up somebody in a headset telling him to run faster, and he runs faster and he wins.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's the Hulk also has similar kind of problems, right? In terms of writing,
runs very fast.
Like, right, he's got to punch harder.
Yeah, exactly. You know, or he gets angry and then he gets stronger. Like it's limiting if you keep exploring that. You know, you need to jazz it up a little. So yeah, brokering a relationship between two villains that's awesome. I'm gonna have to catch up. And what a weird place we found ourselves in. Well, I just said I've got to catch up with the Flash, so I'm gonna have to put on some sneakers and hit the gym. But the fact that we are excited every week to watch Legends and we're like, the Flash is kind of getting rehabilitated.
Yeah.
Like that's a weird spot to be in. I'm grateful. That's cool. But
Right. Well, I think it's interesting too, because with the vacuum that Arrow kind of left behind, you know, getting some of these shows to step up and take on more, you know, just in terms of like being the figurehead or whatever for this franchise, I think is an interesting problem to have to solve. And right now I'm not sure, like the Flash is certainly the oldest of the shows, but I do think, you know, I think everyone would agree that Legends is a stronger show, or at least many of us would agree that Legends is a much stronger show.
I don't know what the numbers are like though.
Yeah. I don't either.
I don't know if that matters.
I don't know either. It seems like Flash got a big boost after the first season. I mean, during the first season, I guess.
I think Flash
really liked the first season, and then, it seemed like the people that I talked to, most of them still watch the Flash out of any of these.
I think it does have a higher, I think it tends to be much better rated. Just looking right now, because Wikipedia does have all these things. Yeah, I mean,
and the Legends is more of a sleeper hit. I mean,
Legends is pulling like three quarters of a million of viewers. So like,
that's not bad.
It's not bad, but Flash is regularly pulling over a million, like a million and a quarter to between there and like a million and a half.
Yeah.
So it's doing like probably about twice
locked.
The...
People yeah. get locked into these things and then... Yeah.
Sure, right, yeah. You just keep watching.
Like us with Arrow.
Yeah, 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 pretty much.
You know what's funny? I just said that's not bad without knowing comparative numbers. But I mean, that many people every week watching a TV show sounds... Like quite a lot to me.
That's fairly low. I mean, CW does not do actually. The CW does not do great numbers. But
yeah.
I know. I guess I knew that the declining number of people that watch TV every week has been the thing going on for I don't know past 15 some odd years probably. But I thought it was way down in the weeds. Now I didn't know it was. You could still do over a million.
Yeah, just a comparison because they have the graph here. Flash's first season. Was much closer to looks like averaging probably around 3.5 million.
Oh wow. And okay. So I was way off. I was like an order of magnitude.
Yeah, as high as looks like the first episode was like, you know, 4.83, yeah, almost 5 million people.
I guess it makes sense. Because what do we have? Like 100,000, 150,000 subscribers?
Yeah, somewhere around there.
Yeah.
Huge share of the podcast market.
Yeah, yeah. Man, I hope the advertisers don't ask to see our books because, yikes.
It's
we sell a lot of bomb spray. Yeah,
it's on the back of a cocktail napkin, so our books are not, they're not great shape, guys. I'm not, not going to lie to you.
No actual books involved.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, so I had been catching up with some of the other shows as well, including I watched the last couple Supergirl episodes, which were fine. Not very excited about this season over there, but yeah, fine. I think I'm still one behind on Batwoman, and I'm still way behind on Black Lightning, which is the thing I need to catch up on one of these moments.
I've not caught up on any of those. I find the whole Lena is just upset that she wasn't told subplot to be dumb, but.
Yeah. Well.
Yeah. I mean, we've done that.
She's going to be an evil. She's going to be an evil villain now because she's butthurt about not being told about Supergirl.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like we just crawled over the finish line with barbed wire at the end, with Arrow, with that kind of stuff. And I'm like, I've kind of had enough. I just want a breather. You know.
Yeah. Right. It's the secret stuff, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Any other superhero sweep topics you guys want to bring up?
Oh, I saw a tweet from Beth Schwartz last night, quoting a tweet that said that,
this sounds great already.
Quoting Black a tweet that quoted another tweet.
No. It was just quoting, it was, God, come on. It was saying that, Black Canary had, or whatever, the Black Canaries, Arrow and the Canaries, whatever the hell it's called, had opened up an office in Vancouver. And she was just saying like, if only that was true. So I don't know how these weird, I don't know where these weird rumors come from. And I don't know who's bothers cooking them all up. But I don't know. It seems weird. Why would you just, I don't understand. And I like, since you guys talked me out of like randomly pressing play on YouTube stuff, I've been a better. I'm back to getting cooking and
that's a healthy lifestyle choice.
It is. It really is. I'm back to getting like cooking and science shows now rather than like weird stuff. I mean, Conspiracy Corner
do not put
is like a nice fuzzy
water.
Right. Yeah. Conspiracy Corner is a nice fuzzy place compared to some of the conspiracy highway that they've got out there.
I do see
four lanes in both directions.
Pretty much. Yeah.
I do see that her last tweet. She says, not sure how I could be more clear. It is not picked up yet.
Right. Yeah. Anyway, I just wanted to say that in case anybody sees that floating around the comic book news.
Yeah. Yeah.
She would obviously know. So
I am surprised about that, but yeah.
I am surprised too. Yeah. The fact that she's mentioning it publicly is interesting. I find there's something like, normally you just keep your mouth shut. If you're doing a business
deal,
she's
feeling like it should have been a done deal already.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you just keep your mouth shut when you're trying to do a business deal.
Sure.
Like you just don't talk about that stuff.
Yeah. Oh, I do see that a random casting note I just came across. Carl Lumley, who was most recently on Supergirl as Jean's dad, has been cast in The Falcon and the Winter Soldier in an undisclosed role.
Oh.
Oh.
Perfect. Good. That's awesome.
I love him.
He better be. Is he the Falcon's dad?
Yeah, probably. I was thinking the same thing.
Yeah.
That'd be awesome. Man, I can't get enough of that guy. He's wonderful.
And of course he used a voice.
There's a Patriot, isn't there? There's a Patriot character who was injected with Super Soldier Serum because his and I never read that, and I'm not even sure if it was in a comic book or not, or if it's just like a reference point for the new character. But in like the Young Avengers, is a new Avengers, I can't remember the young group that they did for a while, but there's a Patriot who is like that guy's grandson or
I think it is Young Avengers.
Yeah.
Oh. But the Deadline article, which is where this is from, says Lumley's role has not been disclosed, but Marvel fans will immediately pounce on the possibility the veteran actor could be playing Isaiah Bradley, aka the Black Captain America.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yes. So basically it looks like a mini series called Truth, Red, White, and Black that essentially was kind of a spin on the Tuskegee studies, essentially, with the black man, right, African American soldiers being experimented on.
Yeah, because I think he ended up with like health problems. Like he was a superhero for a while, and then unlike with Cap, the serum didn't
just
end up
wore off, and he ended up like maintaining all the broken bones.
All of a sudden, he had every broken bone that he should have broken in the first place.
Right.
Yeah. No, I mean, it wasn't like that.
That sucks.
I love that actor from. I loved him on Alias. He was really good on that, and of course, he voiced Martian Manhunter in the Justice League animated series.
Yeah. Okay. He's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, I love watching that guy. I didn't particularly enjoy him on Supergirl, but that wasn't his fault.
I
just didn't get a lot out of that.
He was all right, though. But
he's great. Yeah. Like, honestly, right. I'd love watching that guy. But for whatever reason, it just wasn't gelling with me. And David, what's his name? Harwood? Is that the last?
David Harwood, yeah.
Harwood. Yeah. That's it. I knew that. Anyway, he's awesome, too. They had a great dynamic. It's like a little father son dynamic. I thought that was one of the better parts of the show.
It was touching.
I just didn't care that much about Martian mythology, so I was like, I can't really relate to this
show,
stuff.
Not the right show then.
Yeah, I can't really relate. But I mean, they're doing a great job carrying it. So
yeah, that sort of gets me to my next topic. If we can talk about this for a little bit, I won't go into any detail. But I did see Birds of Prey.
Mm. Oh man, awesome.
Yeah, which I enjoyed. I think it's pretty good, and definitely one, it's up there pretty close to Wonder Woman, in terms of the DC movies. It's way above, which is like way above any of the other ones.
Okay, so I should go see it. I've wanted to go see it.
I think it's definitely worth seeing. I mean, I think I found the problem was that none of these characters are really like, I don't care that much about these characters particularly. I've never been like a big Harley Quinn fan. Because I don't like her, but just because I never read any of the comics with her in them and just never got into that character really.
I mean, I loved her in the Batman animated show. That was awesome. But
that's where she began. That was her genesis. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I just never really bothered following her after that.
And I never watched, I never saw that.
Yeah, and it's got like a bit of like the manic pixie killer girl kind of like.
Right. Yeah.
Like what if a manic pixie girl was a punk is kind of the theory, and it just seems so high energy. I don't know. I'm just not that into that character per se.
She's not my favorite either. Also, I just don't tend. I feel like anti-heroes are not as much my thing.
Yes, me too.
Yeah, me neither.
But
I think you grow out of that. Maybe I really do think you grow out of the anti-hero thing.
Yeah, I can see that.
I mean, not Han Solo, obviously.
Yeah, but like, is he an anti-hero?
Well, he's a more reluctant hero than
Right. Yeah, that's true. That's a better way of putting it. Yeah.
That one's it's on my list. I may wait until it hits TV or something, or streaming to check it out. Yeah. But definitely on my list of things to watch at some point.
Yeah. I think I'll go watch it then, because I thought about going this weekend, but I just got back from California and I was a little tired. But I wanted to go because I'd heard good things about it. I wanted to go check it out for myself, and I kind of wanted to give them a little bit of money.
Definitely give them the good ones. Yeah,
exactly. Exactly. Yeah, they get enough money for the bad ones.
Stop watching Justice League over and over, guy.
Yeah, man, I really caved. I don't know what was that. I was getting the shakes. I need some new superhero content.
Just
on that
something.
One.
Anything. Yeah. Just to feel something.
Yeah, well, I'll put it on the list. Any other topics, or should we do a couple letters quickly?
Let's hit the letters page.
Yeah.
All right. Let's do some letters. Reader Flash writes, how do you usually watch shows? The TVs, via streaming service, Dreambox, phone, tablet, etc. And he's got a second question, but let's address that first part first. How do you usually consume these shows when you watch them?
I'll go first, I guess. I watch them on my Apple TV predominantly. I buy them through iTunes and I watch them there. I typically buy the entire season. Occasionally, and this is really stank, an episode won't be out by the time, like, it, for whatever reason, it won't have been uploaded or available on iTunes by the time we have to record. And then I get stressed out and I do like a good old fashioned Arrow truck heist. And I,
yeah, so I mean, people may not know this, but the shows air Tuesday night and we record Wednesday midday, depending on where you are, but I find that interesting that you run into that experience where it's not on iTunes yet.
It's not on iTunes by
the next day,
by like 2 o'clock in the next afternoon. It's not there. And often I just push it late because I don't know. I don't think about watching it until, well, guess what? I've got 45 minutes and I really need to watch it right now. Mm-hmm. And then I'm like, then I panic for a little bit and whatever. It gets worked out. Mostly iTunes for me, Apple. It's good. It works fine. Today, I just happened to watch it in my office on the TV app on my Mac. But that's because I had to work at the same time. Yeah. And it's a funny enough show that I don't feel like I'm doing it short shrift if I'm also typing occasional stuff, you know? So, mm-hmm. Broadly, that's it. I subscribe to Amazon Prime for, I think I watched The Boys there. And I can't remember. I should probably get rid of that now that I think about it. and Crave for like basically Picard and Discovery and that kind of stuff. Crave is Canada's version of HBO plus a bunch of other stuff. Netflix is where I actually go for The Flash now because for some reason The Flash runs on Netflix in Canada.
Weird.
I don't know why. And I'm like, I'm not gonna pay the whatever it is, $40-some-odd for a season of The Flash when I can just watch it on Netflix. So
yeah. And without commercials, right?
Oh yeah, yeah. None of these things have commercials. I can't imagine watching one of these shows with commercials.
Well, let me tell you,
that's what I do.
John, what do you?
Well, so I used to use Hulu, but then I canceled my Hulu subscription like a year or two ago, something like that. And now I just use the CW app.
Right. Did Hulu carry these shows?
I thought they did. I was trying to remember that actually as I said that because I thought they did at the time. So maybe it was longer ago. Maybe I'm thinking of something else that I was.
Yeah, I was just trying to think. Is like the CW because it's Viacom. I don't know if they were ever
okay. Okay, well, maybe it wasn't.
Maybe. Yeah, I don't remember. It was a long time ago.
Yeah. But yeah, so, yeah, no, I suffer. And for a while, and this is, yeah, I mean, this is getting to your, you know, other other way of watching things. Plex had a, and I don't know, I don't think this is there anymore, but they used to have like a plugin that you could put in that would use the.
That stream
like they're on, yep. I guess their web stream, right? You could watch the recent episodes and then they had some magic way of getting the commercials.
Yeah, I used to do that for CBS shows. There was a similar thing where like you could watch CBS shows through Plex and it would somehow strip out the commercial breaks.
And then they did an upgrade in that thing went away. Yeah, which I'm not surprised. I was surprised it was there in the first place, frankly.
Right. But I did clever. So
you know what? I shouldn't knock like what, like if you watch it for free with commercials, more power to you. That's awesome.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't even know where the commercial breaks go per se. Like, it's not like, and forgive me, this is not an intentional thing. In TNG, because I just watched one last night, you can, like, it fades to black. Like, there's definite, very clear commercial moments. Yeah, and I'm not clear where those are on CW shows. Like, they don't seem to have that sort of same.
Well, I think it's just
like that stare at the camera sort of thing.
Why? it's an editing thing, right? Like in the old shows in like the 80s and 90s, yeah. You know, because every show had to, you know, if you weren't on premium cable, every show had to have those built in. So they filmed them, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas I think now there are clear like scene breaks and act breaks if you sort of zoom out and think about the story. But I think edit them, like basically the thing that you're handing over, you know, if you've got files that are just on iTunes, I think for the most part, they just sort of seamlessly like zip them together. Like, you know, Netflix or something, occasionally you might see the sort of like a brief like fade to black section. But yeah, I think most of the time. I don't know.
I know what you're talking about.
Because like when you go back and watch older shows, a lot of times they're so structured that it's like, you know, cliffhanger, you know, TV commercial moment, right? And then there's commercials and they come back and they restate what just happened in case you just turned in.
Exactly what I was excited to say. And you nailed that point exactly. It's like, you just told me this 2 seconds ago and now you're just repeating. And it's jarring, but whatever.
It's weird to watch now.
But they think they used to take fewer breaks, right? I mean, they think they would only do like a couple of, you know, certainly in a half hour show, they would take like 2 breaks. But I think even like it was almost as if it was set up, you know, for acts, you know?
Right. There was a very specific sort of regimented, like you kind of knew what you had to work with, right? You're like, all right, we're doing an hour long drama, which means we need breaks roughly here, here, and here, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think it's because of streaming and because of, you know, both streaming in terms of like streaming shows that are, you know, dynamically loading commercials and shows that are, you know, intended to be binged later. I think that has changed a lot. Mm-hmm. So it is interesting to watch shows when they're like still shows that plan to have commercials and they don't, or vice versa. It's much worse to watch the other way when you have shows that are not supposed to have commercials and they put them in. That's very weird. I remember when my wife was living in India and we were over there, Game of Thrones was shown on TV but sponsored by Amazon or something. It was super weird.
Oh, no.
But they put commercial breaks in and it was very strange.
That's
wacky.
Like when you're watching a movie,
right? Exactly.
Yeah, a commercial television, and all of a sudden there's just like, whoop, okay, we gotta go.
At least it's not, I mean, if you guys remember, I always think very much back to when I was a kid and watching cartoons, and they had the bumpers where they'll be like, we'll be right back after these commercial messages.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That was always super weird.
You had to explain it to the children what was going on.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It was always very funny.
Well, that's the funny. Like, I mean, you know, I think about my son and how he mostly grew up. We didn't have, do we have cable? I can't remember when we got rid of cable, but he didn't start out watching TV, of course, his first few years of life. And then when we did let him watch TV, it was stuff that I had bought off iTunes and other places. And so he was watching them without commercials. And then when we would go to a hotel and like turn on the TV in a hotel and he'd start watching a cartoon or something, and then we'd cut to the commercial and he'd just be like, what happened? Where's my, what is going on here? Why am I looking at this crap when I want to see my show?
You and me both, like, kid.
Son, let me tell you some things.
That's a great reaction to toy commercials, I got to say. When he's just rejecting them out of hand, that's better than the alternative, which is like,
he's grown up. Yeah, and he's still pretty much that way. He's like, he's pretty hostile to ads.
Yeah, good. Sorry, welcome to the world we live in, buddy.
Lex listens to this show, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Second part to Flash's question, which is on a different subject. Is anyone a fan of the Lock and Key comics, and have you checked out the Netflix series yet? I'm a fan.
I am, and I have
episodes
not.
In. It's well done, though, so far. It's well done so far, though I have a few issues. I have not read the comic.
I did not read the comics, and I have not checked out the show.
Same.
I read a bunch of the comics a few years ago. I think Jason turned me on to them.
Yeah, they're very well regarded.
Some incomparable family butter discussion sort of thing definitely turned me on to them. And I read them and they were amazing. They were really, really cool. I didn't finish them for some reason. I think that might have been the same time where Amazon just bought Comixology. I got really into comics and then Comixology got nerfed and I stopped buying comics on it, which was annoying, but whatever. I just couldn't be bothered to jump through a bunch of hoops to do it.
Right.
You know, like what was an impulse thing and fun to do became like cumbersome and annoying, and I didn't want to do it. But yeah, no, they were really great, and I'm looking forward to seeing the show. I just haven't had time to It is a show that I think I want to pay attention to, like sit down in the evening and watch it properly rather than, I don't know, put it on when I'm cooking dinner and glance at it every now and then.
Yeah, I haven't watched literally any of it. I am familiar with the, I mean, some of it. I mean, I know it's by Joe Hill, and I knew it was very well regarded. But yeah, and they've been trying to make a show out of it for a really long time. Like, they made a pilot in 2011 that was not picked up. And then I think eventually, you know, they made a, finally Netflix bought it or whatever, right? And it started earlier this month. But yeah, that was one of those things that was stuck in like development hell for a long time, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, so yeah, we have not, none of us has watched it. Guys read the comics. There you are. That's all that I have for letters this week. Remember, if you would like your letter to be addressed on air, feel free to hit us up at BiffCast on Twitter. Send us a message at biff@theincomparable.com. And we will talk about it on the show in the future. Any last things before we wrap up here, gents?
Nope.
Silence. That's what I like to hear. Well, in that case, we...
I like that Zari called Gideon Gidget. That was cute.
That is a hip reference for the kids of
Everybody
today.
Gets that one.
Yeah. I really sat up. I got a huge smile on my face. I'm like, oh,
I'll bet that show really telegraphed the commercial breaks.
Yeah.
I don't remember, but I bet it did.
Yeah. Well, we will be back next week to recap Legends Season 4, Episode 5, which, as we discussed, is titled Mortal Kombat. But until then, I would like to thank my partners. Guy English, thanks for being here.
Okay, bye. Thanks. I love you.
All right, sure. John Maltz, always a pleasure.
May I eat my cake now?
Yes, you may. Cake for everyone. Let everyone eat cake. Readers, thank you for following the transcripts. We appreciate it. We appreciate all your support and going along with the show.
I can't believe I didn't get a I love you too. We just talked about this. We just talked about letting people hang.
Guy.
Wow.
Guy.
No, I don't want to hear it now.
Cliffhanger.
Guy.
No, I don't want to. No.
Guy.
No, I don't want to hear it.
Guy. I know.
Okay, you're forgiven.
Thank you all for tuning in and reading along, and we will see you next week.
Where we reveal whether or not we love Guy.
Oh, I don't think I want to be here for that one.
It's just full of Star Trek Next Generation references.
And to show how we love you.
End to end.
Yeah.